From Nimio Field at Harry Grove Stadium, this is Unlocking the Keys.
Hello, this is Unlocking the Keys, the official podcast of Frederick Keys Baseball. You can find us on all major podcast platforms, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and follow us on social media at Frederick Keys. I'm Gareth Kwok, the radio broadcaster for the Keys this summer, and I'll be on the call for all 80 games this season in the MLB Draft League. And this podcast will be put out periodically throughout the season with more special guests from players and our coaches and more. But our first guest today, we couldn't be happier to have the skipper, the manager of the Frederick Keys for this summer, 13-year MLB veteran catcher, and a 1990 World Series champion, Joe Oliver. Joe, thanks for joining.
Thank you for having me, Gareth.
First impressions, I know you just got in like last weekend, and first impressions of Frederick so far.
Well, fortunately, I was in the Carolina League in Salem, so I have a little bit of past history here, so I knew what to expect, and I knew that Frederick's got a lot of history and a great town to be in, and very supportive of the baseball programs here, and pretty excited about being here and making this my hometown for the summer.
Well, we're happy to have you along, and you mentioned your first season with the Frederick Keys, and you've had multiple years of coaching experience, and specifically in the Boston Red Sox organization. Just from a basic level, how did you find out about this position, and what attracted you to it?
Well, last year I was in the Development League, and I was in Bluefield, so got my feet wet kind of in the college ranks and trying to work with young players coming up trying to become professionals. So the opportunity opened up in the draft league, so it was just a natural move over, and you know, I definitely want to try to get back to affiliated ball, whether it's managing or coaching at a higher level or scouting or something. So it was the best way for me that I thought to get more exposure, more experience, and try to be out there and put myself out there to be available.
Well, you mentioned that you had always wanted to get into coaching. Was that something after your playing days, okay, I'm going to take some time off and then get into coaching, or was that I as soon as I'm done, I want to get into coaching?
Well, I promised my wife after I played 19 years of pro ball, four children at home. And so I promised her I'd give, you know, more time at home and help her raise the family. And I took a little different career path. It would have been an easy transition after I was done playing to just go into coaching. But I felt it was the right thing for me to do to help her out. And I wouldn't change anything. I had the opportunity to be there and see the dance recitals and the Little League games and to be a part of it, and I wouldn't trade that for the world.
Well, you mentioned also last season that you were in the Appalachian League with the Bluefield Ridge Runners. Just how was that experience overall? Tell the fans maybe a little bit of kind of what was that like. I know it was sort of interesting how MLB reshuffled some of the affiliates, but how was that overall experience last season?
You know, the Appalachian League, it's tough to see that it went away in pro ball, but at least it was rejuvenated and kept alive at the collegiate level, because there's a lot of passionate fans in those cities that are they're baseball hungry. And you know, it was a great inaugural season. I think it you know, we had a couple of hiccups and COVID decided to rear its ugly head and a couple of times, but I think for the most part it was a huge success. And Bluefield, the people there, the GM there, the front office, Rocky Malamarsa, was incredible. He took care of me and my staff, which I have Angel Sanchez and Dennis Rasmussen coming with me here. So it's been a very easy transition, you know, as far as preparing for this season. But that was a huge stepping stone for us, and I think for the league, to show that it can be done and create really good baseball.
So you've coached, you know, minor leaguers, and now you've coached college players. What's sort of the difference, the big difference that you see between those two?
Well, it's the consistency. You know, in pro ball, you're teaching that day in and day out routine and consistency. And in college, they have to deal with class, you know, and so they've got to separate these two things, these two creatures. And I think the first comment that we heard last year was it was so nice to be able to play just about every day and not have to worry about taking a test or preparing for some kind of classwork. So, you know, they were actually able to focus completely on baseball.
And I think that's the best part about these summer leagues is, right, they get to just 100% focus on the baseball, and they have, you know, I think the beauty of this draft league also is that they're going to get seen by a lot of scouts, right, Joe?
Yes, and that's the whole purpose of this league is put them front and center of the scouts. You know, these guys are eligible to be drafted, whether they're high school players or junior college players or 2 or 3 year players. And, you know, this is an opportunity for them to continue to play against top level talent and be able to have a fair assessment of what they might be able to do at the next level.
What do you enjoy the most about being a coach? And I know you've had multiple years of experience. You've been able to learn some things about just, okay, I'm going to do this moving forward. Maybe I'm not going to do this moving forward. But what are some things that you've, hey, this is the best part of my job?
I think being able to come to the ballpark and have some type of impact on a young man, not only trying to teach them about baseball, trying to teach them about life. And, you know, I've been involved. Dennis has been involved, and Angel's been involved for quite a bit of time. And we've got to pass that on, and we've got to teach the guys the right way to go about their daily routine. And it's just to be around these guys. It keeps you young at heart. It keeps it fresh. And you can't take it for granted that they know, because they're pretty naive about it.
Right.
And then when you get into pro ball, it's kind of the same thing, but you start to see that they kind of have got a better grasp on it just because they play 140, 150 games in the minor league. So it is a daily grind and a daily lifestyle. These guys get a little bit of a taste of it, and it just makes them better. So if they don't get drafted and then go back to college, I hope that it pushes them forward and makes them better in their career.
Were there who were some coaches throughout your big league career that kind of influenced your coaching style, or you got some of their teaching points, or you've been able to bring over some of their teaching points into your coaching?
Well, it's funny because I give Lou Piniella a lot of credit for, whether I was with Cincinnati when we won the World Series or in my last couple of years that I played, I was picked up by him when he was in Seattle. So he is a very demanding coach, very demanding manager, kind of a iron fist guy. And I'm not that type of manager, but I needed that as a player to kick me in the rear end. And it taught me there are different type of styles that get different production out of players and different results. And I needed that, but at times I can be that guy. And it helps me. Phil Garner was a little bit like that when I was with Milwaukee, but he also was a player's manager who understood. I was a little more compassionate about things. But you take bits and pieces out of coaches and managers that you have and try to create your own style. And I'm a little more laid back and relaxed, but I'm very intense when the game starts. And I chirp at the umpires 24/7, you know, and I kind of get into the flow of the game, and I talk a little smack here and there,
okay.
but it's just me trying to stay involved in the game.
So last year in the Appalachian League, did the players have to see you go into a little bit of, you know, give the umpires an earful here and there occasionally?
I think I made a couple of donations to the league. So, yes, but, you know, that's not what it's really all about out there, but it's standing up for the kids and showing that you've got their back, and you know, you're asking them to throw it out on the field and give everything they've got. So you've also got to reciprocate and give that back to them too.
Well, let's talk a little more about your career. Like we mentioned, 13-year MLB veteran, 1990 World Series champion. I mean, I think the fact that you're able to record over 10 years of service time, not to mention getting a championship ring, are those the things that you remember the most, or what do you remember the most kind of about your career?
Well, I think everybody remembers their first hit or their first game. When they get called up, and how amazed you are when you walk into a big league ballpark, and just the environment, you know, and to be able to go through that and experience that, it's really hard to put into words. And then to play really in my rookie year and win the World Series and have a game winning hit off of Dennis Eckersley in game two. And, you know, those are really the highlights of my career. It's kind of a shame it happened all so early, but, you know, you just think about the camaraderie that you had, and you were fortunate when you start telling stories to people and you start mentioning names like Eric Davis and Barry Larkin and Chris Sabo, and, you know, you go on and on, Jose Rijo, and just these iconic names, and then was fortunate enough to play for other organizations and be a part of the Yankees for a little bit, for half a season, and actually be in the clubhouse with Derek Jeter and, you know, Mariano Rivera, you know, Andy Pettitte, and just to be able to see how they went about their business, because you're always in the other locker room and the other side of the field, and you just kind of have that, I don't want to say jealousy or envy, but, you know, you always wanted to know what it was like to be a Yankee, mm-hmm. or a Red Sox or something like that. And, you know, I was one of those guys that had 8 uniforms, so I got to experience about a third of the league, so...
Well, with the Yankees, you couldn't have that beard then back then, right?
No, I just had the stash. That was it.
It's just the stash?
Just the stash.
A handlebar? Or
no,
just simple?
No. And they wouldn't even allow that. It couldn't pass the outside of your lip. So, but it was a great experience. It's a different place playing in New York.
Sure is. And do you still keep in touch with some of those guys? Like I was going to mention Eric Davis, Barry Larkin, and some of those Yankee guys. Do you at all just say, reminisce about those times?
We talk. I talked to Chris Sabo and Hal Morris quite a bit via text. And Norm Charlton and Rob Dibble, I stay in touch with them via text. And, with social media, you're able to kind of stay in touch of what's going on with them and their families. So, it's created a different age where you can kind of grow up with them but not be around them all the time just because you can see the posts on Instagram and stuff. So it's pretty cool. But, we still do, whenever we get together and have reunions, the stories pick up right where they left off, the nicknames, everything.
Must be just great times, just bonding, of course. And, Reds fans, of course, they'll remember you forever for your game-winning hit. I mean, take us through the at-bat. I know that's such a cliche of a question, but what is it like to hit a game-winning hit off Dennis Eckersley, a Hall of Fame closer?
Well, I had an opportunity earlier in the game, like in the eighth inning, I believe it was, off of Rick Honeycutt, and I grounded out with the runner at second base as well. And going into the 10th inning, they brought in Eckersley, and he had an incredible season. And I'd never had any history, and we didn't have the reports that they have now. I didn't have the video that they have now. So I literally was going off what I was watching throughout the season whenever we'd be able to get to watch a game on TV. And I just said, I know he likes to throw breaking balls. I know he throws a ton of strikes. I've got to look for a breaking ball that I can handle. And sure enough, first pitch, I was taken all the way. And was mad that I didn't swing because it wasn't his best breaking ball. And I kind of took one that was really fat, middle, and was really disappointed about that. And the next pitch, I said, well, he's going to throw another breaking ball. And if he throws a fastball in, I'm just going to have to take it because I'm not looking for that. And he threw another bad breaking ball. And I got lucky. I didn't crush it, but I hit it hard enough. And they were playing me more in the hole instead of playing down the line. They were trying to turn a double play. And everybody that I tell, you go into this surreal moment of seeing a ball going through the air, and I can still see the laces just in slow motion spinning.
It's top spin and grounder,
just
right?
Hits half fair, half foul, and all you need is half fair, And I see Randy Marsh signaling fair ball, and then all of a sudden it was like the video started speeding up again, But it was just so in such slow motion. And then to hear the crowd react, it was just deafening with 55,000 people there just screaming and going berserk because we were supposed to be down 0-2, not up to 0-2, not up 2-0, so and heading to Oakland. But, what an incredible moment. It's something that for the rest of my life, if I'd have known then that I was going to be remembered for that, I'd carry that torch anytime.
I mean, that feeling when you must have rounded first and you see your teammates coming out, I mean, that's just probably a memory you'll never forget.
Definitely.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your coaching staff. You alluded to it earlier. Dennis Rasmussen, Angel Sanchez. Dennis Rasmussen was a former teammate of yours. How did you come up with this coaching staff from, you've had them as your coaches for the past, last year with Bluefield. So why stick with the same coaches?
Well, I think it's familiarity. I have a lot of trust for these guys. We've built a relationship that it was an easy transition, just saying, if you guys are interested, please come with me. And they didn't even blink about it and said, let's do it. So, Dennis and I probably talked probably about two or three weeks before Bluefield started last year. And I just had said, hey, would you have an interest? Because he had thrown something out there. We'd talked passively over time and said, I'm trying to, get back in and be a pitching coach. And I'm like, let me give him a call. And we sat and talked probably for an hour and a half.
Wow.
And it was like, if you want to do it, the job's yours. And he got back to me the next day and said, let's do it. And then, of course, I've called Angel because Angel was my coach in Portland and also in Salem. So I had him 2 years professionally. And I just I know his style and his communication, and I wanted to have a bilingual guy too, because mm-hmm. I knew there was a pretty good chance wherever I went there was going to be some Latin-speaking players, and it just makes it an easier transition. I know a little baseball Spanish, but I am definitely not fluent. So, but what he did in the infield and the way he's able to communicate with the infielders and the guys is just, it's, you know, incredible work that he does.
Yeah, when you take a look at this 2022 Frederick Keys roster, it's a mixture of everything. You got a good amount of D1 players, but then you got some D2, even D3, JUCO players, high school players, even 4 or 5 players from Puerto Rico. I mean, there's a lot of diversity on this team, Joe.
And the only one that I know is Kendall Yule, who was with me last year. So it's going to be on-the-job training, literally, and it's going to be pitch by pitch and at bat by at bat, inning by inning, learning what these guys are capable of doing. But the great thing about baseball is it kind of teaches you pretty quick what you can and can't do. And then we have to go in and try to make adjustments and get these guys better. But they're going to be able to tell me pretty quickly who's the cream's going to be rising to the top. So we'll see what we got. And, it might be a combination of lineups over the first few games just to see. So we'll see what happens.
Well, you talked about Kendall Yule, who recently actually was just named a Golden Spikes semifinalist out of Eastern Kentucky. Tell us a little bit more about Kendall, who played for you at Bluefield, and just the type of player he is.
Kendall is a very exciting young player. He's got an incredible body, built for baseball, long and lean, muscular, quick, fast twitch, power to all fields. He's going to love hitting at this ballpark. His strength is right center. He can play all 3 outfield positions. He's probably suited for right field or center field a little bit better just because of his speed. And he can run. He's got a above average arm. And, the year that he had in Bluefield last year and then the year that he put together at Eastern Kentucky is pretty incredible. And to see the maturation process of this young man is – he's not only a good baseball player and a bright future that way, but he's just a good person. And, we sat down and talked quite a bit last year, and it's exciting to see how much he's progressed.
Well, we're thrilled to have Kendall here very soon on the team, and it's a bit of a juggling act with the roster with guys coming in and out. I'm sure this is I'm not sure if this was the case in the Appalachian League. Have you ever had this much guys coming in, early, and then okay, this guy might not be coming until later after his his NCAA tournament postseason is done, and what's that like?
It's a little nerve wracking because last year we did not have a catcher because we had one day to work out. We had half an infield, and we had, I believe, 20-something pitchers. So we were fine on the mound. We just didn't have enough people to put in the positions. And fortunately, we had a couple of pitchers that were two-way guys. So we found an outfielder. We found a first baseman. I moved my center fielder, who is at Georgetown, Michael Eze, moved him to shortstop for a few games until some of the guys reported. And my strength coach at that point, at that time was my catcher for the first 2 or 3 games. And
really? Their strength coach? Yeah,
he had one more year of eligibility. Just like, go get the guys loose, put them in the weight room, and then you're playing.
That sounds like the emergency goaltender in NHL, right? You got this no-name guy, but they always have to designate one for, designate an emergency goaltender, and then right. They end up being the hero, right?
It was a pretty cool story because, we didn't have a lot of positions we were missing, and then just all of a sudden, within a 24-hour period, getting on a bus, we signed another catcher from a local college, and it all worked out. Finally the guys, they started to report, and that'll be the thing here. You got guys that'll come in. We've got a few temp players that are going to fill in, but when some of these guys have sat out and not played in a couple of weeks, it's going to take a little bit to ramp them up too, because you can't immediately just throw them out there and let them play 9 innings. They'll be banged up and bruised up, and then they'll probably end up having to go home. So that's our goal, is to not send people home because of injury.
Right. So do you envision at least keeping guys fresh maybe the first couple of weeks? Maybe we might have you play just to, 5 or 6, and then, we just want you to ease back in.
My goal, and I always never like to paint myself in a corner, but my goal is to probably mix it up quite a bit, get the guys back up to game speed, But then again, you know, as soon as I say something, something happens, and then or I come out and I say I have a set lineup, and then two or three guys go down. So, but I think the smart part on our part would be to mix it up. The pitchers will probably be very limited to two or three innings to start, at least their first time through. Maybe the second time through we'll start spreading it out. It's probably right around max 75 pitches for the starters, and then we'll start mixing and matching with the bullpen and try to keep ourselves in a good spot for not only that game but the game next day. So until everybody's here, you know, it kind of handcuffs you on what you can and can't do.
Yeah, I think that's also the challenge of these summer leagues is these players are, they want their ABs, they want their innings, right? And it's like there's a lot of mouths to feed, right?
It is. And I was actually sitting in the office going through all the position players that are on the roster and who's here, and I'm sitting here going, boy, the innings are not matching up with the amount that we've got. But you know, unfortunately, some of these kids are only going to be here for a very, very short time. But you know what? They can come in here in that short period of time and earn a full spot. So we're still looking. So
do college coaches at all give you directions at all? Like, hey, make sure you don't pitch this guy any, you know, more than that? Or is it kind of your decision?
It's kind of our decision, but we've got the feedback from them already throughout the league. So they've already talked to either Dennis and giving them some type of maybe a pitch shaping thing they're trying to work on. Maybe they're trying to work on their changeup or whatever. So, but I think the ultimate goal is to continue to focus to get these guys to throw strikes. I mean, that's the ultimate goal of any pitcher is the command of being able to throw strikes.
Here with Frederick Keys manager Joe Oliver, Gareth Kwok here, a radio broadcaster for the Frederick Keys. Besides baseball, what are some things you like to do, you know, off the field? I heard you're a big golf fan. Are you?
I wish I golf more, but I love fishing.
Fishing.
So my wife and I and the league giving me a hard time during some of our Zoom calls we'd have in the afternoon. I would be out on the water fishing and, you know, doing the Zoom call off the boat.
I see what takes priority over the other, right?
I'm like, as long as I can pick up cell service, I'm going to be out there. I'm not coming in for a Zoom call.
what's your biggest catch that you've gotten?
8 or 9 pound bass.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
All right.
So, not huge, but not tiny. But, you know, it's fun. My wife gets out on the back of the boat. She reads her book. She relaxes. We got some music playing, and I'm just up front, and I'm fishing, and we're just trolling around, having a good time.
Well, hey, they're on an off day. Right? Don't be surprised. Joe Oliver's out catching a big catch out there. You know, final question, of course. You know, you mentioned your goals a little bit, but just your expectations for how this season might go and how, you know, it might all play out here in the Mio Field, the Harry Grove Stadium.
Well, I think it's going to be exciting baseball. I really wish I had a better feel right now of what to expect from some of these players. And, you know, you can watch video all you want to, and we have the Synergy, information. And I actually was just sitting there watching some of my players trying to familiarize myself a little bit. And you just don't know until that umpire says play ball what you're going to get. But I think you're going to get a lot of guys out here with a lot of passion and a lot of drive, because watching the workout yesterday, just sitting back, even though I was hitting fungos, I was really trying to watch how these guys went about their business. So a lot of these kids have been coached up very well, and they're prepared, and they're hungry, and they want to get better. So I think when they jump across that foul line, they're going to be excited and a great product to watch.
Well, we're looking forward to what should be a really fun 2022 summer. Joe, we're so thrilled to have you here in Frederick. And thanks again for the time on this episode.
I appreciate it.
This has been episode one of the Unlocking the Keys podcast. Make sure you follow us on social media at Frederick Keys, as well as we're here on all major podcast platforms on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts. I'm Gareth Kwok, and we'll see you all next time.